And if you want to see a description of the divine liturgy, you can always go to the book of Revelation, because according to our understanding, that's what's going on there. It's the divine liturgy that is being done in heaven at the end of time. But if you don't bring that to the book of Revelation, you're going to miss a lot of that. According to our way of understanding, there's a lot of language in there. There are a lot of processions. There are a lot of presentations. There are unrollings of scrolls. All those things that are done during the divine liturgy. That's part of our understanding of that book.
That's not the New Testament method, which is a smaller church.
Well, no, I would disagree with that absolutely, that it's not the New Testament method.
Do you think they marched in? Because of the fact
that everybody was doing it, they didn't need to write it down and tell people that they were doing it, because that's what they were doing. Yeah. That's our understanding.
It's very much formal. That line that Paul gave was fairly crude compared to this.
It was before the book of Revelation.
Prophecy.
Basically, another thing we would say is this about our relationship of our services to the services in the first century. You can go. One of the things that happened to me at seminary is I was able to go downtown and go to the Jewish Theological Seminary, and we came in to meet with the Jewish theological students along with ourselves, Orthodox Christian students, or students from various Protestant and Roman Catholic seminary got together, and we could hear their liturgy going on downstairs. It was a chant. It was a different chant than we were familiar with. As it turns out, our evening service, our Vespers service, you can compare with the synagogue service, the Jewish synagogue service. It's essentially the same service, except that you have commentaries. You have commentaries on the psalms that the Jews sing. There are commentaries on those very psalms that are part of our Vespers. In other words, there is the sign that there is a transition, a movement from that evening synagogue service to a Christian service where there is commentary on the psalms that people would expect to hear that is Christian. So all of the meaning of the psalms is understood in light of Christ.
That's interesting.
That service is still exists. It's done every week. Every time we do Vespers, it's done. So there's more continuity.
Bring us into psalms.
Okay.
Let me do this about that.
I apologize for that.
No, that's okay. It's interesting, but it's hard to follow.
You can get too much of that stuff.
You are the guy that loves seminary, you know.
I am.
So we got.
And loves to go back even, you know. But this is what I have here is my personal prayer book, and there are written prayer books, but many years ago, before going to seminary, I wrote this out. For myself. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I have here are verses from the Psalms that are especially significant, you know, to me.
Well,
of course, it's the Septuagint version, but the differences are very slight.
Okay.
Between the Septuagint version and the King James version, unless you have something else. What version do you have?
New King James.
It's close enough, you know.
What psalm is it you're going to talk about?
Psalm 4, the fourth psalm, verse 5. And I like especially the way Psalm 4, verse 5 begins in the King James version. You know what our professors used to tell us, if you can't read the original language, use more than one translation. Don't just fix on one translation, use several good translations. That way you'll get more of what's in the original language. So in the King James, what do you have there? How does it start?
Verse 5?
Yeah.
Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord.
Okay. What I have, Psalm 4, verse 5, be angry and do not sin. Have remorse upon your beds for what you say in your hearts.
That's verse 4 for me.
Okay, yes, there is a numbering difference between, there is a numbering difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would be 5. Be angry and do not sin. Meditate within your heart on your bed and be still.
That's interesting. It's especially interesting because the old King James Version, it says, stand in awe and sin not.
Oh, I like that.
Which I do too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, you're translating, I think you can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
are you going to decide, is it more than 50% this meaning or that meaning? And you have to make a choice to bring it into English. But both of them are in the original language. Both stand in awe and sin not, and be angry and do not sin. You know.
Well, that is really weird. Be angry. Are they trying to say be passionate? Be convicted? They're saying stand in awe?
Well, I think if you're angry, sometimes when people are angry, they're not sure if they're angry at somebody or if they're angry at God.
Wow.
If you're not going to be angry at God, what's the alternative? Awe. There's no other alternative. You know, so you can't
be... telling you, be angry, but don't sin.
Well, yes, okay. You know, the Psalms are very passionate, of course.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's a very passionate, intimate relationship between the psalmist and David, traditionally, and God. So it's not unaccountable that it would say, okay, human beings, you get angry, you're angry, but... And then just go to the other translation of the same words in the original language. Be angry, but stand in awe. Don't give in to your anger and condemn God, like Job was being tempted to do and refused to do, although he did ask for an answer in the end. And what did God say? It's none of your business. Where were you when everything was created? Stand in awe. So this anger that we have, that things are not the way we want them to be, what is the answer to that? Our only appropriate relationship to God, which is to stand in awe of Him. So those two things are in the original language somehow. That's what we would find. Stand in awe and sin not. Feel compunction upon your beds for what you say in your hearts. So repent. Let's see now here in the Septuagint.
What is that Bible you have?
This is a translation from the Greek language Septuagint.
Okay, that's in English.
And it's so right, it's in English.
Okay.
And
where do you get those?
It's called the Orthodox Study Bible.
But they have to order them specially?
Yeah.
You can't get them in a Christian bookstore.
Well, you could if they ordered them. So be angry and do not sin. Have remorse upon your beds for what you say in your hearts. Offer the sacrifice of righteousness and hope in the Lord. There are many who say, who will show us good things? Give me good stuff, God. A lot of people are into that. O Lord, the light of your face was stamped upon us. You put gladness in my heart for the love, the worship, the glory of God. For our participation in this divine life that Christ has made possible. I mean, you know, Christian will see that in the Psalms. That's a favorite of mine, so it's in my prayer book for that reason. Another favorite of mine comes from Psalm 48:14, and I have in parentheses 49:14. We have to look for the difference in numbering. There's a little bit of difference in numbering Septuagint to the Western translation.
So should I go to 49?
To agree with the numbering, you'll have to look at Psalm 49. So Septuagint 48:14, and you look in 49:14.
Like sheep, we are laid in the grave, death shall feed on them, the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning, and their beauty shall be consumed in the grave, far from the dwelling. That's one of your favorite verses.
Well?
Tell us about it. Give us a call right now, 706-482-0525. Glad to be on. Make your pledge any amount. Help us out here at the radio station.
It comes up in 15, but we'll start in 14.
Okay.
48:14, this is in the Septuagint. Their road is a snare for them, those who have gone aside from the path of the Lord. Yet afterward men will be well pleased with their sayings, like sheep they are put in Hades. Death will shepherd them. That's my line.
Yeah, that's a better...
Death will shepherd them. If you go astray, death is your shepherd. Death is guiding you. You have to repent of that and go the opposite way on that path. Because otherwise, death is shepherding you. You think you're doing the right thing. You're led by your passions. You're led by your desires. You're led by the things of this world. Exactly. And this is something that I need to be reminded of, you know, periodically. So it's in my prayer book.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is in Psalm 52. Okay,
50. It's an interesting way of looking at things. I like your version very well.
Now, my quotation, they that work iniquity eat up my people as they eat bread. Read 52 and look for it. The fool said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt and abominable in lawlessness. There is none who does good. God looked from heaven upon the sons of men to see if there were any who understood or sought God. All turned aside. They were all together rendered useless. There is none who does good, not even one. Do all the workers of lawlessness not know? They eat up my people as they eat bread, and do not call upon God.
You think that's in Psalm 52?
It's Psalm 52:5. It'll be 53 for you.
This is 53:4. Have the workers of iniquity no knowledge?
Right, right.
They eat up my people as they eat bread, there and you do go. Not call upon God?
Yeah, that's it. Every year before Easter, we call Pascha, we have a 40-day fast. It's the strongest fast that we have during the year. We get ready for it a couple of weeks early. We stop eating meat. And then the second week, we stop eating dairy. And the third week is the beginning of Lent, and there's no meat and no dairy for 40 days during Lent. And oftentimes, Orthodox will hear a sermon that mentions at the beginning of the great Lenten fast, do not consume not just meat, but your neighbor. Do not make your neighbor your bread, to feast upon him, to make them subject to you, to build up your sense of power and strength and vanity and all of that sort of thing. That's what the Psalms are talking about.
All over the world, the poor people are being eaten.
That's the way the world works. That's the way the world works. And this is being condemned, you know, by the psalmist right here. And it's something that we need to remind ourselves of. You know, which is why it's in my prayer book.
Take care. Yeah.
That I should not do that. It's not that I get to condemn other people and say, be self-righteous, say, oh, look at those people. Look what they're doing. I have to watch my own heart and to make sure I am not doing
capable,
that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Another one that I like comes a little bit later in this same psalm. They feared with fear where no fear is. That irrational anxiety and fear that we have, it's based on our reliance on ourselves, on our pride, and our fear that we are not going to be able to remain the master of the world, which we aren't. You know, it's a.
It's, some people really
but,
think they are.
But there's no real reason to be afraid.
In office, actually.
We don't have to be afraid because it's in God's hands. It's not in my hands.
Well, you know, the opposite in the New Testament says, faith casts out fear.
Love. Sure, exactly.
Love casts out fear.
Exactly.
And faith is the opposite of fear, because
absolutely.
If we're in fear, we cannot trust God to do whatever.
Right, and it is the person who is trying to master their own life that is the person who has
lives.
Fear, where there's no reason to fear because God is in control. But you have to have faith in God to lose that fear and have peace.
Yes.
So that's what I think is going on there.
Yeah. It's interesting, it's in conjunction with four, which is eating up the people like bread.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both very closely related.